Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Anne Ball, John Russell, Phil Dierking, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, Katie Weaver will have this week's Personal Technology Report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
A top United Nations official has criticized U.S. President Donald Trump for his repeated criticisms of the news media. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayd Raad Al Hussein is warning Trump's comments could incite violence against news media workers. He also accused the president of attacking freedom of the press. Trump has repeatedly criticized news organizations such as the New York Times newspaper and CNN television for their reporting. He also has been critical of the Washington Post newspaper, which is part of the internet business Amazon. The president criticized some media organizations for their reports on violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, earlier this month. The violence took place at a demonstration called by white nationalists. Their opponents launched a counter-protest to answer the demonstration. One counter-protester was killed in the violence. Later, Trump criticized the media for their reporting, calling some reporters truly dishonest people for the way they described those events. Al Hussein spoke about Trump's recent comments in Geneva Wednesday. To call these news organizations fake does tremendous damage, the UN official said. He went on to question criticizing individual reporters. Is this not an incitement for others to attack journalists? He asked. Al Hussein called the violence in Charlottesville an abomination. He added that a reporter from the Guardian newspaper had been, in his words, assaulted in the United States most recently. The UN official also expressed concern over Trump's decision to pardon Joe Arpaio, a former Arizona law enforcement official. A court had found Arpaio guilty of disobeying the order of a federal judge to halt targeting immigrants at traffic stops. The Trump administration announced the pardon last Friday. Al Hussein also said he was worried about comments the president has made in the past about women, Mexicans, and Muslims. Al Hussein formerly served as Jordan's ambassador to the United States. He has been the UN's top human rights official since September 1, 2014. I'm Mario Ritter.
A storm named Harvey set a rainfall record in the continental United States this week. It dumped 1.32 meters of water over southeastern Texas. The former rainfall record was set in 1978 as Tropical Storm Amelia dropped 1.21 meters of rainfall in the same area, according to the National Weather Service. Scientists say this may show what the future will be because of global warming. They say climate change did not cause Harvey, but they note that warmer air and water mean wetter and possibly more intense hurricanes in the future. This is the kind of thing we are going to get more of, said Princeton University climate scientist Michael Oppenheimer. This storm should serve as warning. Scientific methods can be used to study if Harvey is tied to man-made climate change. It involves complex mathematical processes, and it will take weeks or months to complete the study, and even longer to be reviewed by other scientists. But in general, climate scientists agree that the future storms will drop much more rain than the same-sized storms that came before. Why is that? Warmer air holds more water. For every degree Celsius, the atmosphere can hold and then drop an extra 7% of water, according to several scientists. Global warming also means warmer seas. And it is warm water that fuels hurricanes. Hurricanes need air temperatures of at least 26 degrees Celsius for fuel. The water in the Gulf was at least that warm, 100 meters deep, according to University of Miami hurricane researcher Brian McNulty. Jeff Masters is meteorology director for Weather Underground. He says when Harvey moved toward Texas, water in the Gulf of Mexico was nearly 1 degree Celsius warmer than normal. Climate scientists are still debating what role, if any, global warming may have played in causing Harvey to stall or stop and sit over Texas. The storm not moving on was the big reason for the disastrous flooding. All that rain would not have landed in any one area if the storm had moved on like other normal ones. Harvey stalled because it was between two high-pressure weather fronts. They pushed it in opposite directions and trapped it in place. Princeton's Oppenheimer theorizes that there is a connection between melting sea ice in the Arctic and changes in the jet stream and the weather patterns that make these blocking fronts more common. He is not the only one thinking this, but others say it is too early to know. Cliff Mass says climate change is not powerful enough to create an event like Harvey's rainfall. He is an atmospheric scientist at the University of Washington. You really can't pin global warming on something this extreme. It has to be natural variability, Mass said. It may juice it up slightly, but not create this phenomenal anomaly. We're breaking one record after another with this thing, Mass said. I'm Ann Ball.
A former rebel group in Colombia is becoming a political party. The Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia fought against the Colombian government for more than 50 years. It was the largest rebel movement in the country. This week, it launched a political party at a conference in the capital, Bogota. The former rebels said they would work with other groups to overturn the country's traditional conservatism. The rebels signed a historic peace deal with the government last year. The agreements guarantee the former fighters 10 seats in Congress. The new party will get the same amount of financial support the government gives to Colombia's 13 other political parties. The government also agreed to give the former rebels $500,000 to launch a research group to help the party develop its political beliefs.
Rodrigo Londoño was known as Timochenko when he fought for the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, also called the FARC. He recently told a group of former rebels they are taking an extraordinary step in the history of the common people's struggle in Colombia. But he noted that the decision to sign the agreements doesn't mean we are rejecting in any way our fundamental principles. The group has said that it still believes in the political and economic ideas of Karl Marx, and it says it will seek support for its social justice policies from poor people, workers, and middle-class Colombians who live in cities. The group faces opposition from many who identify the rebels with kidnappings and terrorism. In August, an opinion study found that fewer than 10% of Colombians said they had complete trust in the rebels as a party. A large majority said they would never vote for a former guerrilla in congressional elections.
Adam Isaacson works at the Washington Office on Latin America, a research group. He says the former rebels are not going to be received very warmly in most of Colombia. Their human rights record hurt them. Their media image is terrible. Most Colombians, quite simply, aren't socialists or communists. But, Isaacson added, all is not lost. A message of wanting to redistribute wealth and undo economic injustice could probably do quite well in a lot of poor areas of Colombia. The group's entry into politics is strongly opposed by politicians like former President Álvaro Uribe. He has sharply criticized the peace agreement, and the Supreme Court is now considering whether a law naming the former rebels a political party is constitutional. Earlier, the court had ruled it was. At a recent court hearing, former Peace Commissioner Camilo Gomez said, "The fact that a war criminal could become president of Colombia makes no sense." But many people support the deal. Ivan Cepeda of the Alternative Democratic poll says bringing the rebels into the political process is the best way to guarantee a lasting peace. We have had to pay a very high cost in lives, in infrastructure that today we are saving with the end of the conflict, Cepeda said. It's more an investment in the democracy of Colombia.
The FARC was formed in the early 1960s by guerrillas allied with Colombia's Communist Party. Over the next 53 years, at least 250,000 people were killed in fighting among the rebels, government forces, and paramilitary groups. About 60,000 people are still listed as missing, and millions of people were displaced. 4 years of negotiations in Cuba between rebel leaders and the Colombian government ended with the signing of the peace agreements. The rebels agreed to give up their weapons and admit to their crimes in a special peace tribunal. Most of them will not be sent to jail. The rebels must also return any property they seized to victims of the conflict. The agreement also deals with how to reduce the production of coca crops, from which the drug cocaine is made. The United States once named the FARC as one of the world's biggest traffickers of illegal drugs. Colombian voters rejected the peace deal by a small number of votes, but the country's legislature later approved a different version with minor changes. Recently, the Colombian company Politmetrica asked Colombians whether they were hopeful about the peace process. The survey found that public optimism has dropped since the nationwide vote last October, from 67% of those surveyed to just about 53%. I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm John Russell.
Officials in Tajikistan have decided to begin the new school year this Friday, even if Friday is one of the holiest days for the country's Muslims. The Education Ministry confirmed to Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, on Monday that classes will be held in schools and universities across Tajikistan on September 1st. This is the same day as the start of the Muslim holiday Eid al-Adha, or Feast of the Sacrifice, which takes place over several days. Eid al-Adha is one of two major religious observances named as public holidays in Tajikistan's 1994 constitution. The other is Eid al-Fitr, the Muslim festival that marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan. The country also observes September 1st as the Day of Knowledge, which marks the beginning of the school year. Tajik officials said they decided to start the new school year on this date. But they also chose to give students a public holiday on Saturday, September 2nd, to celebrate Eid al-Adha. Students in Tajikistan attend school 6 days a week, including Saturday. Eid al-Adha is celebrated for 3 days, so our students will still have an opportunity to celebrate it on Saturday and Sunday, the ministry spokesman said. The decision was supported by imams across Tajikistan, where about 9 out of 10 people are Muslim. The religious leaders urged parents to honor the government's decision and send their children to school on September 1st. Imams in Tajikistan largely support the country's secular system of government. In recent years, Tajik leaders took steps to tighten control over some Islamic customs as officials warned of the possibility of growing extremism. The hijab head covering and other forms of Islamic clothing are not permitted in Tajik schools and government offices. Children are mostly barred from praying in mosques. Other Central Asian states that declared independence from the Soviet Union have made their own decisions on how to handle Eid al-Adha and the start of school. Kyrgyzstan will mark both the religious festival and the first day of school on September 1st, but has canceled classes. Instead, schools will hold gatherings to mark Education Day. Kazakhstan moved the first day of school to September 2nd to enable Eid al-Adha celebrations. Uzbekistan did not need to make changes because September 1st is already a public holiday held to mark Independence Day. Turkmenistan's state media reported that Eid al-Adha would be celebrated with a three-day public holiday starting on September 2nd. The country announced an additional day off September 5th to make up for the Sunday that happens during the Eid al-Adha festival. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Everyone feels sad from time to time. But what happens when that sadness lasts a long time? Is it just a passing feeling or the medical condition known as depression? Many people do not know whether what they are feeling is a passing phase or a serious condition requiring treatment. They may not know where to turn to find out if they should get help. Google is trying to change that by helping people recognize whether what they are feeling is actually depression. The company has teamed up with the National Alliance for Mental Illness, or NAMI, to offer a questionnaire to people who search for the word depression on Google's website. The Alliance says clinical depression is a very common condition. In fact, approximately 1 in 5 Americans experience an episode in their lifetime. However, the Alliance says only about 50% of people who suffer from depression actually receive treatment. Google has set up a short examination that can help people recognize whether they are suffering from clinical depression. The test will be offered to people who search for depression or clinical depression using Google on a mobile device. The search results will show information on depression with a link to a series of questions to help identify if someone has signs of depression. The questionnaire is called Patient Health Questionnaire 9, or PHQ-9. Mental health experts use many of the same questions to help identify depression in their patients. While only a trained expert can identify depression, PHQ-9 can be a starting point to help you know whether to seek treatment. NAMI explains, "We hope that by making this information available on Google, more people will become aware of depression and seek treatment to recover and improve their quality of life." To take the test, search for depression in Google's search engine. The results should show an explanation about clinical depression. Below the explanation is a message that reads, "Check if you're clinically depressed." Click that message to begin taking the questionnaire. Google says the test takes about 5 minutes to complete. Touch the Get Started button to begin. At the end, you will see a list of numbers from 0 to 27. It will show how likely you are to have signs of clinical depression. The website also shows what to do next based on the results of the questionnaire. PHQ-9 was developed for adults, not children. The questionnaire is available on Google search results only on phones and tablets, not other computers. If you search using a computer, you will see information about depression, but not the link to PHQ-9. If you want to search for depression with a computer, or do not see the link to the questionnaire on your phone or tablet, you can search for PHQ-9 on Google instead. By taking this questionnaire on Google, you will be sharing information about yourself with the company, if you are in your Google account. Google says that your answers will be kept private. They will not be shared with others. Google's privacy statement appears before the questionnaire. There are other ways to help identify whether you are suffering from depression. The PHQ quiz is also available at the patientinfo.com website. You can take the test and see the results to help judge whether you suffer from depression. Mental Health America, or MHA, also offers an online depression test. After you take the test, MHA asks for personal information. But you can ignore that part by clicking on the word "submit" without answering any of the questions. You will see the results of the test with suggestions about what to do next. The free depression test app for Android by JAPS Medical also uses the PHQ-9 questionnaire. The app also gives users test results based on their symptoms of clinical depression. As with all computer software, be sure to read the permissions section before getting this app. Also, the magazine Psychology Today has a depression test you can take online. Its test lasts about 20 minutes and gives you a short report. If you want a full report, you will have to pay about $5. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.